You're tuning into The Deep Dive, and today we're jumping into a really high-stakes area, patent litigation. Specifically, how understanding legal strategy and, you know, discovery can be a total game changer. This is especially true for you future legal eagles listening in.
Absolutely. We're focusing on Visteon v. Garmin. It's a case that gives us some crucial insights into patent law.
Especially around willfulness and discovery scope, right?
Exactly. It really shows how courts look at whether someone knew they were infringing and what info they have to cough up during the lawsuit.
So to really dig into this, we've gone through the court documents, the district court's findings, expert takes on Visteon v. Garmin, and our mission today, pull out the key legal and strategic lessons, willfulness, discovery limits, expert testimony, stuff that's super relevant for law students.
Let's do it.
Okay, so set the scene for us. Who are the players here?
You've got Visteon, the patent holder. And then there's a Garmin, the company Visteon accused of infringement.
And the tech involved? What was the actual fight about?
It was all about vehicle navigation systems. Visteon had patents on specific ways these systems let you search for places. Think like searching by category restaurants near me or typing in addresses using those alphanumeric keypads.
Gotcha. So Visteon claimed Garmin's GPS devices were using these exact search methods patented by them. What were their main arguments?
Well, the core claims were direct infringement. Garmin using the tech and indirect infringement, like encouraging customers to use it. But the big one really was willfulness. Visteon argued Garmin knew about the patents and infringed anyway. And of course, they wanted money damages.
And Garmin's side of the story, I assume they didn't just roll over.
Oh, definitely not. Garmin denied infringing at all, said their products didn't use Visteon's patented tech. Plus, they attacked the patents themselves, arguing they weren't valid, shouldn't have been granted. And they also fought Visteon's damage calculations, saying they were inflated. A full court press defense.
Okay, that brings us straight to willful infringement. Why is that such a hot-button issue?
Right. Willfulness is a major factor because if a court finds it, the damages can skyrocket. Under the patent law, specifically 35 U.S.C. Section 284, the judge can actually increase the damages awarded, potentially up to 3 times the actual amount. So proving willfulness ups the ante considerably.
And how does Garmin's internal knowledge play into this? What they knew and when?
That's where it gets really interesting, particularly for students thinking about corporate liability. The court looked closely at whether Garmin knew about Visteon's patents and, crucially, whether they understood their own products might be infringing. Did they have internal info suggesting they had defenses, but maybe they ignored the infringement risk anyway? That internal knowledge became key.
So this is where the In re Seagate test comes in, the standard for willfulness.
Exactly. In re Seagate lays out a two-part test. First, the objective prong. Looking from the outside, was there an objectively high likelihood that Garmin's actions infringed a valid patent? Was the risk really obvious?
And the second part, the subjective one.
That focuses on Garmin's actual mindset. Did Garmin know about this high risk, or should they reasonably have known? It's about awareness and potential recklessness. Did they bury their head in the sand, so to speak?
Okay, so even if willfulness is found using Seagate, deciding how much to increase damages involves other factors, right? The Reed factors.
Spot on. The Reed factors guide the court's discretion on enhancing damages. They look at things like, did Garmin deliberately copy Visteon? Did they investigate the patent properly and form a good faith belief they weren't infringing or the patent was invalid? Even how they behaved during the lawsuit matters. Were they playing games, hiding evidence? Interestingly, the court here said even objective factors could influence these enhancement considerations, not just Garmin's subjective intent.
Fascinating. Okay, let's switch gears a bit to discovery. There was a big fight over when Garmin learned about its potential defenses, wasn't there?
Yes, a major battle. Visteon wanted to know the exact dates Garmin figured out its arguments against infringement or patent validity. Garmin pushed back, trying to keep that timeline under wraps.
And the court's decision on that?
The court agreed with Visteon. It ruled that the dates Garmin became aware of its defenses were discoverable. And here's the strategic twist. Garmin said, hey, we won't even use this timing to argue we weren't willful. But the court basically said, doesn't matter.
Why not?
Because that timeline, when Garmin learned about potential issues with Visteon's case or their own risks, was still relevant. Relevant to the objective prong of Seagate, how high was the risk objectively at different points in time, and also relevant to those Reed factors for enhanced damages. The timing could show if they acted promptly or dragged their feet once they knew something.
That makes a lot of sense. The timeline reveals a lot. And wasn't there also a deposition of Garmin's in-house lawyer, Sam Corti? That sounds tricky.
Absolutely. Another point of contention. The court allowed Visteen to depose Sam Corti, Garmin's own lawyer, about certain parts of Garmin's efforts to design around Visteen's patents, basically, trying to create alternative tech that didn't infringe.
But isn't that usually protected by attorney-client privilege? How is that allowed?
Good question. The key was limiting the questions to non-privileged information. The court noted that the engineer actually working on the design around admitted he hadn't even looked at Visteen's patents. So Corti's knowledge, his understanding of the patents and the design process, became potentially relevant.
Relevant how?
Relevant to figuring out a reasonable royalty. The court thought Corti's insights could help determine what Garmin might have reasonably paid for a license before the lawsuit started in a hypothetical negotiation. If they had a viable non-infringing design option, which Corti might have information about, it affects how much they'd realistically pay Visteen.
Okay, that's a critical distinction between legal advice and factual knowledge about technical efforts. Let's talk experts now. Visteen used Dr. Joel Steckel and these conjoint surveys, right? What was that about?
Right. Dr. Steckel did these conjoint surveys. They're basically sophisticated market research tools. You try to figure out how much value consumers place on specific features of a product. Steckel used them to estimate the dollar value Visteen's patented search features added to Garmin's devices, according to consumers. This was central to Visteen's damages claim.
And Garmin, predictably, took issue with these surveys.
Oh, completely. They argued the surveys way overvalued the patented bits and didn't properly isolate them from all the other cool stuff in Garmin's GPS units. Essentially, they said the methodology was flawed and the damage numbers were puffed up.
How did the court handle that expert dispute?
It was a bit of a split decision. The court did agree to exclude some of Steckel's opinions, especially where he seemed to be speculating about Garmin's state of mind. The judge felt that was more for fact witnesses. But crucially, the court didn't throw out the surveys entirely. It basically said the jury could hear about the surveys, and it would be up to them at trial to decide how much weight to give them, considering Garmin's criticisms.
So the court acted as a gatekeeper, ensuring the testimony wasn't completely out of bounds, but leaving the ultimate credibility call for the trial. You also mentioned motions in limine. Remind us what those are.
Sure. Motions in limine are just pre-trial requests to keep certain evidence out of the trial altogether. Like, judge, please order the other side not to mention X because it's irrelevant or prejudicial. In this case, for instance, the court granted a motion to stop anyone from talking about separate patent reexamination proceedings, likely to avoid confusing the jury.
Got it. And just to loop back quickly to the hypothetical negotiation for royalties, why are design around efforts so relevant there?
Because the whole point of the hypothetical negotiation is to figure out what royalty rate Visteen and Garmin would have reasonably agreed to before any infringement started.
Yeah.
If Garmin had a good, cheap way to design around the patents and alternative technology, they wouldn't have been willing to pay Visteen a very high royalty, right? Mm-hmm. Their leverage in that negotiation would be stronger. So Corti's knowledge about those design around efforts potentially spoke directly to that negotiation dynamic.
Okay, let's quickly summarize the court's big rulings here.
Sure. Key holdings were: the timeline of Garmin's defense awareness is discoverable. Deposing in-house counsel Corti on non-privileged design around facts is allowed. And expert testimony on damages using surveys was partly limited, but mostly left for the trial jury to evaluate.
So, boiling it all down, what are the big takeaways for law students from Visteen v. Garmin?
Well, first, discovery in patent cases can be broad, especially when willfulness or damages are on the table. Don't assume internal strategies or timelines are safe if they touch on those issues.
And the role of in-house counsel needs careful thought, especially if they get involved in technical details like design arounds.
Exactly. Non-privileged factual knowledge gained in that role might be discoverable. It really highlights how litigation strategy and the actual patent law are intertwined. Evidence you might think hurts you on willfulness could still come in if it's relevant to damages or objective risk assessment.
So this case isn't just about whether a patent is valid or infringed. It's also a huge fight over information.
Precisely. It's about what people knew, when they knew it, and what they did about it. Understanding that information flow is critical.
So key insights from our deep dive. Grasp the Seagate test for willfulness. Be aware of the broad discovery scope in these cases and understand that in-house counsel actions can be discoverable.
Couldn't say it better.
Which leaves us with a final thought to chew on. How do these discovery rules actually shape corporate strategy when facing infringement claims? And what ethical tightropes do in-house lawyers walk trying to balance protecting company secrets with the demands of litigation transparency? Something to definitely think about as you continue navigating the complexities of patent law.